Hi everyone, my name is Patrick Akil, and joining me today is Kevin Powell. He teaches people how to make the web and how to make it look good. He's a real CSS guru, so naturally, we touched upon everything CSS related, whether it's frameworks and even how he taught himself HTML and CSS in the first place. I'll put all the links to his socials in the description below. Check him out. And with that being said, enjoy the episode. I was checking out your YouTube videos, actually. You've been doing this for 5 years?
Yeah, it's a long time now.
That's really cool, man. I really admire that. Why did you start doing YouTube videos in the first place?
I started because I'd been hired as a teacher. And where I was teaching, it was a design school, print design primarily. But they had the curriculum had just got updated and had an introduction to web, like HTML and CSS. And all the teachers were print teachers. So when I got hired, it was just as the curriculum it was being changed. Yeah. And me and one other new teacher both are the only people basically that had any web experience. And so we got thrown into that class because no one else was comfortable teaching it. And it was, I really enjoyed it. But after 2 years of doing introduction to HTML and CSS, I was getting a little bit, it was a little bit repetitive. And I was I need to do something that just lets me sort of teach other things and just talk about other stuff. And also just to like do things that are interesting and to keep up. Like CSS was, it wasn't quite there yet, but it was starting to like, it was, you know, get a little bit more interesting. And I'm like, I don't want to fall behind. I want to be able to keep up with what's happening.
Nice.
So yeah, I saw it as a way. It was really just a hobby project. I had no ambitions of it becoming anything else than that. So it was just sort of fun on the side to sort of keep me doing what I enjoyed.
Yeah, I love hearing that. Was teaching always in your past as well? Like, did you always teach?
No. I mean, if you go really far back at one point, I used to coach for our ski racing team when I was like a 15, 16, 17. But other than that, no. it was really, the place I was working was at the time when I got hired to be a teacher, it was a really good place. It was a really small agency.
Nice.
But it meant like I got from day one, basically tons of responsibility. My boss would bring me to meet the clients. I'd be seeing like how everything is done from A to Z. So experience wise, it was fantastic, but the pay was terrible. So I'd been freelancing on the side quite a bit just to try and make ends meet. We had a newborn kid and stuff. And then so when it was one of my old teachers reached out and said, they're looking to hire some new teachers now. Would you be interested? And I was like, oh, well, yeah, I could use something that has, you know, a little bit more pay and I don't have to worry about freelancing and all of that so much. So yeah. I jumped on it. Yeah.
I love the hustle, especially early on or not even early on, just hustling and getting to where you're meant to be. I don't think in terms of end destinations, I think of your career in terms of a journey, I guess, because I started in information science. That's what I did at university. And that's a little bit of data science, a little bit of computer science, but a lot of business studies as well, right? You learn about organizational models or business models and go into the history of successful businesses as well as businesses that have failed and learn from that. But I did have some aspects with regards to computer science. That's why I don't consider myself self-taught, even though the courses were build this website, you can choose from a forum to a different thing to another thing and teach yourself how to do it.
Right.
you did get some guidance there. But then I started out in operations, and through that I got to touch a lot of things. And a lot of things I still didn't know what I wanted to do, but because I had that really broad experience, I learned what I didn't like and what was still interesting and what I still wanted to try out. And then it got to a point where I was like, man, this is still operations. Like I know how to fix stuff, or I think I do, except I'm not responsible nor accountable, nor sometimes do I have access to do that. I just have to talk to people and they get it done. And then I'm like, man, sometimes it takes so long to get that stuff done that I saw all these things talking about DevOps and how you can combine those things. That's why when I really trended towards software engineering and getting that into kind of my skill set as well. And still, it was a, a whole different ball game learning in school versus learning in an experienced development environment. But that was a lot of fun trying things out that way.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. But you've always been passionate about CSS, CSS specifically. I started out, I started out in the more on the back end side of things. And then when I actually went to front end, CSS was one of the things I struggled with mainly.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I think that's pretty normal. Yeah. I mean, the reason I was drawn to it was it's sort of where I started making websites as a hobby in like the late 90s when I was in high school still. And it was like this on again, off again thing, but it was always like the visual side of stuff that I've been interested in. As I said, I was, you know, I went to a school for design and stuff like that too. I worked in print design for a while. So when it sort of making that transition to the web, it was definitely, yeah, the visual side, I think it was always interesting. And CSS I really like, cause it's like the puzzle of making that visual thing actually happen. And yeah. So I quickly realized I actually liked that more than doing the design. I like making the design happen. I think that's more interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think what you said there about it being a struggle, I think is really a common theme that I see, which is sort of why I didn't realize it at first when I started my channel. Just because, I mean, I'd been teaching in the classroom and seeing the struggles people had, but that was the beginners. They hadn't touched anything. So of course they're learning things from scratch. It's hard, but the more I've been on YouTube, and just sort of seeing what's happening at the world at large.
Yeah.
I see a lot of those struggles coming from whether it's beginners or people more from like a computer science background or, you know, a more traditional programming background. Just because CSS is so different from everything else and how it works. So yeah. I think that's wrapping your mind around like, oh, this is just a completely different mindset to be in, I think can be hard.
I agree. It's so different. I do think it's getting easier. I mean, I've worked a lot with designers and I used to get, for example, a PDF. And now we have tools that help us that the design already has some of the CSS components in there. Colors is the most like basic form, but even like the width and the shapes and all that stuff, sure, you have to tweak it and it's not perfect, but it's already a starting point. It makes it a lot more fun to work with designers and actually implement the design. Because if we're talking about the thing that I'm doing, I love doing the design and actually seeing my stuff visually on the screen. It's so fulfilling. It's instant gratification when you get something right. And man, it looks really cool. Yeah, that's what really draws me, basically.
Yeah, definitely. When it finally works and just falls into place, it's nice. And I remember the days, like you're saying, you'd get like your static file that was just, you know, sometimes would be a JPEG or something that you just had to sort of do what you needed make to do happen. With it. So
yeah.
I do think it also helps, like, I think designers are also a lot more aware of how the web works too.
Yeah.
So that I think there's been enough discussions. You still hear about friction, I think, on that side between the designer wanting something and the other side, especially, I think actually these days, the biggest friction point is like, between like breakpoints and other stuff. Like,
yeah,
you know, as amazing as the design software is getting, you're still stuck with these static artboards or frames and all of that. So like this idea of like a fluid landscape is something that I think there's still a bit of friction there depending on the designer. I think there's a lot that do learn at least the basics of HTML and CSS. Yep. And sometimes deeper than that, but I think that always helps when they have some experience there, just knowing that it's not so straightforward. You know, this is what it might look like in this ideal perfect situation where the person's screen is exactly that size, but yeah, that's never reality.
Yeah. I love designers that say, okay, this is what I visualize, and whatever we can get up and running first, we'll tweak it. And then I sit next to the designer and they're like, oh, let's make this more crisp like that. And I don't see what they're seeing, but when I tweak it, I'm like, that is better. And they have such a good eye for that, but it takes a certain amount of practicality from both sides to make the end product actually be delivered faster and in a way that's actually accessible to a lot of people as well. I think from both fronts, both on the development side as well as the designing side, we can learn so much from each other as long as we have that communication in place. Because I've also worked with like agencies and stuff gets thrown over the wall. And yeah, that, if we're talking about frustrating, that is one of the frustrating factors there as well. Yeah, yeah. For sure. But I've seen... Go ahead.
that was going to say, the open communication is so important when it's possible. As you said, it's not always there, but it's good when it is.
One of the coolest videos I've seen on your YouTube channel, I was actually just browsing, was the CSS battle thing you did. Man, that looked awesome. I don't think, I didn't know that existed. I don't think our audience knows either. Could you lay out what that is?
Yeah, so it's CSS challenges basically that have no grounding in reality. So don't go in if you're a beginner, it might not be the best practice because you're probably doing things the way you shouldn't actually do things. a lot of, moving things over one pixel at a time to get it in the right place. But basically you have it looks like something that should probably be done with SVG effectively. So like some sort of flat sort of image vectory looking thing, and you want to try and match it perfectly with CSS.
Yeah.
So you have basically a blank code to start with, and then you just do what you need to with it, put in your divs or whatever it is. And you just try and match it, and you can, I'm doing it visually, but for people listening, there's different modes you can go into to compare what yours looks like to the finished one to make sure that things are in the right place and everything.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, if anybody hasn't done it and they're like, oh, I want to try that out, it sounds like fun, there is a scoring system that's about using the least amount of characters as possible. So really? If you're into the world of Uber optimization and getting sort of hacky with stuff, and that's a challenge to you, definitely you could try and lower your score as much as possible. But that's where you really do get into this realm of insane optimizations that you'd never ever see in the real world.
Yeah.
I personally, when I do it, especially for YouTube and stuff, to make it sort of challengey and all of that, I do it more based on a time limit. Can I match the design 100% match in the least amount of time possible?
Yeah.
Because I can't get the high scores. It's a little frustrating on that side of things.
Skill.
Yeah, it's definitely a different skill and one that I don't have. So I go for as fast as I can. And I guarantee you there's people that can go faster than me.
Yeah.
The one, even for me, I still, when I'm doing it, my mind is so set in let's use percentages and M's and rems and other stuff that throw that out the window. I'm using, just position absolute, use your pixels and just get things exactly where you need to be and you'll go faster. But it's hard for me to break out of the way I normally think about things, but it's a fun way to any design you're doing is a puzzle where you're just trying to match the design. So this is something I could do that in 5 to 15 minutes and this little thing. And so it's fun for that. And it's like you said, with that gratification at the end when you get it.
I saw the video and it looked so fun actually to do that and to compete, because I saw you did it versus someone else. It reminds me a lot of because I used to watch a lot of gaming videos of speed runs and people trying to compete, because I also saw the timer. Yeah, I've never seen a video like that. But even with regards to coding challenges, I'm sure they're out there, stuff like that as well. I just never seen them. And man, the CSS one looks really cool.
Yeah, it was fun doing it as a challenge. That was with Kyle from WebDev Simplified. And it adds that little extra element trying to beat someone else at the same time. So like you said, a little bit like a speed run. So it was fun.
I can imagine. But moving back to how you kind of became, because I looked you up online and the stuff you're doing with CSS, I'm sure that if I YouTube how to do stuff with CSS, you're going to pop up. How'd you get to that point? Because you're completely self-taught or not really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
98%, let's say.
I'll count that as self-taught.
it was a lot of what, we'd been talking about a lot earlier on, when I was working at the small agency. So when I was working there, I was mostly doing design work and a lot of it was for print. And then I was freelancing on the side. And the freelance work on the side, the vast, vast majority of it was UI design. Yeah. So whether it was simple apps or some website stuff. And I'd been playing around with websites as a hobby basically for 15 years at that point, on and off. And especially around that time, I'd sort of been, or around when CSS3 became a thing, that was that big exciting thing. So I definitely got back into it at that point.
Yeah.
And so I was making these designs, freelancing it. And I'm like, well, if they're going to pay me to make the design, they should also, you know, I could make more money if I also made the site happen once the design is approved and just do the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's also when I realized I actually prefer making the sites rather than designing them. I'm an okay designer. It's definitely, you know, looking back, I'm like, oh, I should have realized this a long time ago, but, so yeah, that's sort of how I got. And it, like some people ask me like, oh, how do you get so good at CSS? Like you're there's a lot of it that I just know. And it's just like, I'm like, for me, it's such a weird thing because it was a hobby for so long and I sort of would do it a little bit. Like it was table-based layouts with like, you had the font tag and everything early on. And so like, I sort of like evolved with it, but I wouldn't make a site for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then I'd sort of, oh, look, there's some new stuff now that I can do. And oh, like CSS, there's a lot new properties. And so like, I just sort of like kept sort of like updating every now and then, oh, I have a new project. I want to make a site for it. So like, but if I look back to those days, the stuff I was making was terrible. It was like, but I think that was part, and being self-taught early on was also hard because we didn't have, you know, Stack Overflow and all the websites we have today and yeah, everything else. It was a different environment. And then when I decided like, okay, let's see if I can actually, you know, make some sites here. And I started, you know, that was just a lot of practice at that point. You have to make it work. It has to be there for the client. Everything needs to be there. So you sort of, a little bit like you were alluding to when when it's different learning when it's in sort of an actual work environment, but you learn how to make stuff happen.
Yeah.
But I really think where I got really good at it was when I got hired as a teacher to teach introduction to HTML and CSS, because that's really when you realize like, okay, I know how to make, I could take this design and I could make that, but I don't actually know, like, you know, especially then it was, you're using floats and clear fixes and stuff for layout, which if you don't know what that is, if you're listening, don't feel bad because you don't need to know that anymore. But yeah, so like I could do it, but I had no way of explaining it. And some things I would do without even really knowing why, but it worked. So I did it every single time.
Yeah.
And then when I had to teach it, that was a completely just like, I have no idea what I'm actually doing moment.
Confronting.
Yeah. Cause having to explain how things are working, cause you can't just say like, do this. Cause then they're like, well, you know, what's actually happening there?
Exactly.
You run into it. It was really, teaching it taught me more than anything else I've ever done. And it's one of the things I always tell people that are learning is, it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to get in front of a classroom and teach. Whether you write a blog post, whether you're just writing notes to yourself, whatever it is, like it doesn't have to be public facing. Though if you are writing like notes and sort of self-documenting things, you might as well make them public because it might help someone else.
Yeah.
But that like that idea of explaining how, even whether you're typing it out, whether you're dictating it, whatever it is, like the mental connections you make all of a sudden and the things that just click. It's insane. Like as you're trying to explain something, you're like, oh, I understand that now. Just because you're not just doing it. You're whatever, your brain works differently in those situations. And so like for me, having taught in the classroom definitely was the biggest thing. And the one that created the biggest leap for me in my understanding of how all of it worked.
Yeah. I love hearing that. I always sometimes wonder why people write a lot of blog posts. Cause personally, I don't enjoy the act of writing a blog post. But then if you put it in a way that they're trying to explain something and their format is doing it through a blog post, and through that, they're getting better at the skill they've honed and they're trying to explain. Yeah, then I could see where there's this many blog posts. Yeah, because also we do some trainings on the side as well. And I've done that, I think, once or twice. And man, it is confronting. But I think it's also a skill that you're like, I don't know this, or let's figure this out together, right? Because mm-hmm. you're not going to be able, if you're teaching and if you're flying in front of a class, you're not going to be able to get every question 100% of the time. There will be times where you're like, I actually also don't know this, but it's also a skill to be like, oh, let's figure this out. Because that's the beauty of, I think, what we're doing is that you can figure things out and there is room to figure things out. And there should be, right? You're not expected to know everything. It's a growth journey for everyone. But yeah, that focus on teaching, I really like that.
I think the other thing that it also did for me was it made me revisit the fundamentals and like the real basic stuff.
Yeah.
And I think with anything that we're learning, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, but definitely with CSS, just because I'm so familiar with it, I see it all the time, where when you learn the very, like, you learn, there's a lot of early stuff. There's like the box model, the cascade, and like all of these little things that sort of, they don't mean too much early on.
Yeah.
You're taught what they are, but it's sort of like you have so much other stuff that's important, of like all these new properties and values to be learning.
Yeah.
That I think these other things sort of like, you know about it. Okay, I get it. And your brain, you can't absorb all of it. And I think revisiting fundamentals, once you actually have, like, if you're the, let's say, an intermediate level or even a really high level, just going back and looking over the fundamentals of how stuff works, I think is really, I think that for me, that was another one of those big things of like, oh, okay, now I get why people were trying to teach me this early on. And you sort of, you might find holes in your knowledge that all of a sudden make things just make more sense overall. And it, you know, yeah, having the, I think with anything, having that strong base is always really important. And like you said, then it makes it easier when you have to learn that new thing. Like, oh, I don't know how this works, but I know I can figure it out. And if you really have a good understanding of what's going on, it makes it even like 100 times easier.
Yeah, I agree. Because I was kind of learning in a work environment, I learned how to get things done. So I completely recognize that my fundamentals, specifically if we're talking about CSS, are probably not as good as they should be. And now things are getting easier also with, because I'm using CSS frameworks, especially in the latest project that I'm in, that the fundamentals don't necessarily need to be there to get stuff done. But then when I really come into a problem, oh yeah, then I need to dive deep into the rabbit hole and kind of start from scratch. Like, what are these things? Because I've heard them or I've seen them, but what do they actually do? And then it's a bit more of a struggle. So I might take your advice on that and actually do some fundamental work as well. But I do enjoy the CSS frameworks that have been out there. Have you like played around with like Tailwind, and have you used Tailwind, Tachyons, and even Bulma? Have you played around with them as well?
I've used Bulma and Tailwind.
Yeah.
Tailwind, people always ask me for Tailwind content, and I don't have any. and I won't. It's not because I don't think it's a good tool.
Yeah.
It's just, it's one of those, my generic answer is, I see why people like it, but it's not for me.
Yeah.
But that's just because, like, if you look at what I do, like, I write CSS all day long.
Exactly.
I enjoy writing CSS. So, like, you know, it's just that I don't think, like, I'm the market for what it's there for. But at the same time, I see it as a useful tool in, like, a lot of different ways. I've seen some people use it just as, like, I do use utility classes in my own CSS. I just don't use it for everything. I have sort of, like, the set things, and I have my own way of generating them and stuff. But I've seen a few people now using Tailwind, not for everything, but for generating the utility classes that they do need for their project, and then the rest of it just rolling custom or rolling however they want to do for the rest of it. So they're not, it doesn't become like the tool, it becomes one of the tools in the workflow.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, I also know why any framework, I think, that's well done, it's there's Mike, I'm going to mispronounce his name, Mike Aparicio. He's a design systems expert. His big philosophy for whenever he's working is, if he can put it together a good system so everyone else doesn't have to write any CSS, then he's doing his job properly. Because he's like, there's all these people coming in that have expertises in other things.
Yeah.
And then they start they have to make this, you know, they have to write some CSS because they need this to work. And then it, you know, everybody's doing it a different way. And then it's, you know, you run into problems. And if CSS isn't your expertise, and then you're, you know, you're muddling around, you're making maybe things that aren't the best way, that, you know, it, like anything else, you know, if you ask me to write some complex JavaScript, I'm going to make it work, but it's probably not the best way to do it. And it could even have some downstream negative effects.
I get that.
So, say, I think, you know, the same thing can happen. So when you have these tools, like, you know, a well-made framework, it can, it makes it so if your job is to write JavaScript, but you need to, you know, make that visual side work, CSS isn't, you know, isn't what you want to be spending all your time on learning, because it's its own thing. Well, this is saving you from having to do that. And it has everything in place that you need. So 100% like makes sense. And I, you know, I would do the same thing if I was in that situation too. So, Yeah,
I get that. I recognize what you say, that the way people use Tailwind CSS, or at least what I've seen, if they use it into its fullest extent, it goes everywhere in the HTML and you can't really figure out what the classes do based on the acronyms that Tailwind gives you. But if you make these utility things, then all of a sudden it becomes a lot more structured, right? Your HTML is still the same and you make a utility based on what Tailwind offers you. I've seen that also in enterprise software and it works from an outside point of view. But yeah, when you then actually go into the classes and what they mean, it's a different skill. It's like a different language almost. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different beast that they've created. And sure, it might be effective, but it is another tool that you have to learn. Whereas the fundamentals are still CSS. So if you understand the fundamentals, then all of a sudden, yeah, you're like, I could also do this in CSS and maybe it's a time saver. But the basics are still CSS. Like that's the core component that you have to learn. Do you think people that are learning CSS nowadays or even like HTML and JavaScript skip to the more advanced stuff? Like if we're talking about JavaScript, people start with React Framework or Vue.js or go wherever. And maybe even people with CSS might start with Tailwind. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I definitely think it happens. Mm-hmm. I know, I mean, even from my own experience, when I first started having to make stuff happen and I learned jQuery before I touched any, or I started trying to learn JavaScript. I'm like, oh, jQuery is easier. I'm going to use that instead.
Give me.
Yeah. Obviously JavaScript's come a long way. But looking back, I'm like, I probably shouldn't have done that. But yeah, I think 100%. It's one of those things where I find, well, especially like with a lot of the boot camps and other things that are going on now too, you see it because they're there to teach. They sort of want to focus on the skill that's going to get you hired, which often might be something like React.
Yeah.
And so if they're focusing on like, this is the skill that we're going to give you because we know you'll get hired based on that. And then like I talk to people that have gone through them and they might do one day of HTML and CSS. And then they sort of don't, you run into this world where you don't know what's JavaScript and you don't know what's React,
yep.
Right? The same thing happened to me when I was using jQuery. I knew that it worked, but then when I finally started, like, hey, I need to pause here, go backwards, because if when I knew jQuery, like, it makes it harder when you want to pivot to a different direction.
Yeah,
and I think it's the same thing, whereas, like, learning React has its... like you're learning a lot of other things than just how React works. There's, you know, just the mental model of working with it, using state, all these other things. Those are transferable skills.
Yeah.
But I think knowing the fundamentals of JavaScript and then getting into one of those frameworks or libraries makes it a lot easier, because then if you do need to pivot or you run into a new project that isn't using React, you're not stuck. But again, it's easy for me to say that. Obviously, it's a big time investment and everything else when it actually, and it depends on what school you're going to or where you're learning and all these other things. Because I see it with CSS too, where people say, like, you know, they find Bootstrap for the first time. They're just like, oh, why should I learn CSS if I can just use Bootstrap and it works? And it's a little bit like you said, right? Well, it works 80% of the time. And then you run into the situation where you need to customize it. And, you know, you need something it's not quite doing and you just have no idea how to do it. And actually, I think understanding the fundamentals obviously is really important no matter what the language is.
Yeah.
But I know back when I first started using Bootstrap, and I don't use it anymore. I haven't even used the newest ones. I touched on 4 just to see what it was about. But I learned a lot. It was Bootstrap 2 at the time, and I learned a ton. Not so much from using it, but seeing how it worked and understanding sort of like, okay, why are they doing it this way? And, you know, what going through the documentation properly, but then also like trying to figure out what's actually going on. And then just through like even their class naming on how they were organizing their files, how they were doing everything. Like for me, that was nice because you're seeing how a large scale thing that can be work from one project to another works. So at least for me, that was, I think, a good learning experience. But instead of just using it, it was trying to understand what's actually going on. Because then again, like if you understand that really well, then you're also much better at actually using it, right?
Yeah.
Like you're not stuck going, oh, well, how does this, you know, how can I achieve this? You go, oh, I know I need my CSS to do this, and I know this is what their doc, you know, or you find it in their documentation or whatever it is, but it's about how do I use this tool to accomplish what I want? Yeah. But you need to know how you would accomplish it in the first place, right? So
yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with that, because the current project I'm working in has BOMA. And I know a lot of stuff, how to do it in CSS now, because I learned along the way. And then I just open up their style sheet because they have it on GitHub, and I search for what I want. And I'm like, oh, this is this class. It's kind of reverse engineering what I need based on the fundamentals that I have. And then I use whatever the framework offers me, yeah. Right? It wasn't my choice to implement it. I am happy that it's there. But yeah, I do see where the limitations are, because you either going to make an exception and then the project is going to move forward with that exception, which might grow into more, because you're also going to set a standard, or you're going to use whatever the framework has, including its limitations. And then you're going to have to talk to your designer and say, well, this is actually not possible, or we need to make an exception. I like that designers nowadays also think and have their own design systems, right? The most prominent one I've worked with is Atomic Design, where, okay, it makes sense what kind of molecules we have, and those form into, I forget the second one, but at some point you have an organism that is made up out of components and molecules, I guess. Man, I'm probably really butchering this. But they come together and they form bigger organisms, and that makes up your web page in that way. And you can be like, oh, we have this already, and we don't actually need a full design for this, right? Because we don't want to keep reinventing the wheel. I've also come into projects where we have multiple variants of the same thing, and it's just a mess, right? The code base is all of a sudden 5 times larger than it should be, just because you have that mess. So I'm really happy with the trend that is going towards more design systems and making software more maintainable, because it's very much a long-term game that we're playing.
Yeah, I think any scale, making something that can scale is one of the biggest struggles, no matter what you're looking at, whether it's the front end or the back end, or, you know, every part of it, and design and that side of things falls into that as well.
Yeah.
It requires a lot of planning and figuring things out from the early stages. But like you said, if that's in place, it really helps out. And design systems are definitely, I think with the combination of the sort of the evolution and where CSS is going right now, along with this sort of the maturity and the respect for having a properly done design systems, both from the designer side and then being able to implement that into code that can be used in the project. I think some companies at least are starting to be like, okay, we could get somebody who's, you know, you almost get like, you have the designers, then you can get a person or a small team of people that are sort of the ones that are going to more the CSS side. And then you have the other people that are more about the implementation of the functionality and everything else. And I think, you know, with the I think the more we can specialize in each thing, that it sort of brings out the strengths in everybody, which hopefully we start seeing more of, as time goes on.
Yeah, I agree. I like that role is interchangeable, because I still want to touch upon, for example, if we have utility classes, which are completely CSS, I like that the knowledge is within that team, and I can just pick up a teammate and be like, okay, let's do this together. Because I think, sure, we can be specialized, but we also need to be general enough to get the stuff done, right? If someone falls away, we need to be able to do it. And I do see us trending towards that, more cooperation, more collaboration. The thing that I'm struggling with now is, so I've already been in this game for a few years. I don't know what it's like to be teaching myself how to code now. But one of the biggest struggles I could foresee is the collaboration aspect is not necessarily there, right? I could look at the CSS battle thing, and everything is pixels and nothing is rems or ems or is going to be relative. And that could be my starting point. And then I'm going to try this or put it into practice, and it's either not going to work, or I'm going to get destroyed by people that actually know how to make this scalable. It's a hard journey, I think, nowadays.
Yeah. And as you know, I have obviously my YouTube channel. I do courses and other things on the side, and my biggest struggle with online teaching in general is definitely from having taught in the classroom, where if somebody had a question, I'm there to answer it. But the nice thing with that is, like, you're seeing the struggles happen in real time. But the other part is that collaborative part where, you know, if I was doing something in the classroom, I could have a project that was a team of people doing it and have different responsibilities and different things going on. You can sort of try and mimic some sort of, it's still never going to match the actual workplace, but at least you sort of get that idea of working with other people and building up those skills as well. Doing it online is it's so hard, because even if you get people that are motivated on day one, people just fall off, they ghost the project, whatever it is. It's something that, from, if you're self-taught to be, and you know, I had the same thing. Like, for me, everything was from the coding side of things. I was just freelancing almost all the time, and yeah. So pretty much everything I was doing was on my own, just making stuff work. And then at one point I started doing some consultations and other stuff and working on bigger teams. And it was a huge adjustment for me to be able to really get into, like, okay, this is how the communications are work. Like, it wasn't just like, learn, let's bring my expertise and bring it here, because there was this entire other skill set that I had to learn to be able to properly contribute towards projects and stuff. And there's definitely mistakes and stuff that you're making early on when you're not used to that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely, if anybody knows a good way to sort of integrate that into online learning, I'd love to know what it is.
Yeah, it could be, I don't know, maybe Discord groups, or like making smaller focus groups. But as you say, if not everyone has the same dedication in a work environment, the dedication, if it's not intrinsic, it's there externally because you're getting paid. So at least people show up, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's already a big factor. But self-study just requires a lot of discipline. I think that's fundamental. If you don't have that, then it's going to be rough along the way. Where do you think web development is trending towards? Because I think a lot of people are moving more towards mobile first, right? Especially in Asian continents. I've done projects there where it's like, all right, 90% is on mobile. So if our desktop works, good. If it looks like shit, we're completely fine. they're completely mobile first. And here it's still, it depends on the domain. It's still on and off. I don't know how it's in the US, but I am seeing a trend that is way more mobile first. What do you think that's going to mean with regards to web development?
Yeah, I know whenever it frustrates me a little bit, because whenever, I've always advocated for mobile first, but not for the reason of it, we're targeting phones necessarily.
Yeah.
But whenever, anytime I've made a YouTube video looking at my approach and why I do mobile first, within like 5 minutes of the video going up, I always get comments from people saying, I don't need to worry about it. I do like enterprise level stuff that's only ever going to be used on the desktop, so this doesn't matter. And I go, well, yes, in that situation, 100% it doesn't matter. That's not what I'm talking about. Like, you know, it's, if I was doing the same thing, I wouldn't care either. But, you know, most people aren't living in the world where we're building enterprise level stuff that's never going to be consumed on anything other than a computer or a desktop computer.
Yeah.
And my philosophy, I haven't come up with a name for it yet that works or that actually sounds good. So I'm still calling it mobile first, but it's more like the path of least resistance. So like writing the least amount of code basically that gets the job done. And usually for like almost everything that is going to be targeting mobile anyway, because on mobile layouts are the most basic already, you know, when you're doing a layout, things stack by default.
Yeah.
And so on mobile, everything is just generally stacked and there's nothing too complex on the layout going on. So the issue with desktop first is always, if you make a three column layout, so even if it's just display flex and that's it, then when you get to, okay, let's put in a media query and let's change the layout for mobile. Well, you had to create the media query and you had to change it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you went mobile first, you can throw all that in the garbage because you don't need it. The layout's already working. And then you can add the complexity at the larger screen size or add another breakpoint, but only after. You don't need to change things back. And there's always going to be times when you're overwriting things. Maybe you set a font size here and then a new font size here, or you're setting, I don't know, it might even be you use a display flex and you're changing the flex direction. There's different things you can be doing.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, by adding complexity at larger screen sizes, for me, it just makes it a lot easier. There's less code to maintain for the most part. But again, talking about people that get mad in my YouTube comments, I did one where I was looking at doing a navigation for a website, and it was like the hamburger menu at small screen sizes and just the typical normal one at larger screen sizes that goes across the top of the page.
Yeah.
And in that case, there might have been 100 lines of CSS. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but let's just for a big number. But you had a whole bunch of CSS because there was you had your positioning going on. You had to have, you know, what is it when it's open? What's the CSS for when it's closed? There was a lot of happening.
Yeah.
And at the desktop, there was maybe five lines. You do a display flex, you throw a gap on it, and it was done, basically.
Yeah.
So in that case, well, no, I'd rather actually do that desktop first, where I have the minimum amount of code making that work, and then I just wrap all that complexity inside the media query. Because if not, I'm doing all that complexity, and then I have to go and overwrite all those properties. So I have to change the flex direction, I have to change the spacing, I have to change this. There's just this huge list of stuff that you're overwriting to try and force that other one to go. So I think the key is always just trying to do something that involves the least amount of work possible.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing less work, it means there's less code, it means there's less to maintain. And that just so happens that most of the time, that means you're only worrying about mobile early on anyway. So
yeah, I agree with that. I've seen both sides, right? Projects where it was probably a bit more early in my career, but I would see exceptions in the code that would be like, mobile has this one with regards to HTML, with regards to style, it's just be an exception. Yes. And then all of a sudden we would have quite a lot of exceptions because mobile is still quite different from the design systems we chose, right? Mm-hmm. And then I went to a different project and there it was the other way around. It was like, oh, when it's a bigger screen, because it also had that class. I don't know exactly if it was that, but let's say it was that. If it's a bigger screen, all of a sudden it's this. And I noticed, okay, it was a shift in my mind because when I would deliver new code, I would be like, if it's mobile, it's going to be that. They'd be like, no, let's try and make it mobile first, right? Let's do all the code as if it were to be normal on mobile. Because if you scale that to a desktop version, and then all of a sudden it hit me because I could see all the moving parts. And in desktop, it would look a little bit less nice than what I'm used to, but everything would be in place, right? And the other way around, you just don't have that screen real estate. So then, from a code perspective, even though it's a shift, and even though you might not have done that in the past, that was exactly it for me. I'd never done that in the past. But you do see the benefits from that. And as you say, it's less code, right? But I also like your example because I have not noticed that. People will take that approach and be dogmatic about it, right? If you're making a hamburger menu on mobile, oh, that's going to be the first one. And then your desktop exception can be very tiny. Yeah, then it becomes all of a sudden you're like, okay, why can't we do this both ways, right? Choose the most practical way. Mm-hmm. But then we have discussions. Well, what's the standard? that's a harder thing. I think once you're communicating, and I still think mobile first is kind of a not a golden rule, but maybe a silver rule, I think you should be good with regards to complexity. But yeah, it took a while to get hold of that.
it is definitely like a mind shift though, especially, I mean, a lot of people too, they tell me they only have like their designer, whatever they're getting it from is only desktop and they don't even have anything else, which definitely happens too. So it's definitely like this, and you're usually working on a desktop too. So you have the big screen that you're working on.
It's
so like,
there.
There's a lot of reasons why we want to start working that way for sure. And if you've made even one project that way first, it just becomes the way that you're going to work.
Yeah.
So, but if anyone who's listening hasn't tried it the other way around, even just starting with a desktop, like just to find a really simple layout just to try and recreate that's desktop only, or you only look at the desktop version of it and see if you can make it work with a mobile first approach, and you might surprise yourself at it becomes intuitive pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I've also worked on projects where my designer gives it in a mobile first view, and then I'm like, what's the desktop going to look like? And then he'll be like, well, we'll figure it out, right? And then we sit side by side, I do the mobile version, I scale it, and they're like, looks good. Looks pretty good to me, because everything should scale kind of automatically. And then you're good, right? Also for your designer, I think it's way harder for them to envision what is going to be on mobile. But yeah, if a lot of people actually use that, I mean, customer is king, right? I don't know if that's an English translation, but that's definitely a Dutch one.
Yeah, it works. Yeah.
So they get to decide. And if their preferred platform is mobile, then we as the people that build that platform also need to accommodate for it in whatever we're doing. I like it though. I think it simplifies a lot of things. I'm also a fan of the frameworks. I think you and me talked in the call we had before the show also. Do you think it'll get to a point where, I mean, we need fundamental knowledge of CSS, but will it get to a point where we don't have to write CSS, or will it always be there? What do you think? Because I think it is trending towards a lot more training wheels. Maybe a framework and a training wheel is not the best analogy, but it is tools to kind of not reinvent the wheel consistently. I think it's trending towards that. And it's not just on CSS. It's also on the back end. It's also on the front end. We try and do a lot of stuff without writing a lot of code nowadays.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm actually really unsure of what the future is because of the direction CSS is going and a lot of the new stuff that's either just landing now or is sort of on track to land within the next 12 to 24 months.
Yeah.
That I'm like, I can't see how a framework would be. Well, I mean, some of them you could 100% do for like certain things.
Yeah.
But like the power of some of the stuff that's coming, I don't know how a framework would really take advantage of it because a lot of it is very, or, but again, we don't have it yet. So it's one of those things that's, it's exciting. And again, I'm speaking in abstracts, but like we have container queries coming, we have container units coming. So those are like, you know, if you haven't heard about them, we have media queries right now that are looking at the size of the viewport. Yeah. And it's not really a great way if you know, we're building components. And a component might be something in this situation, it's in the footer and it's full width. And then you take the exact same component and you want to put it in a sidebar. Using a media query that's looking at the viewport to change, say, the font size or the layout isn't very practical because in the footer, you want it to be a different layout than you do there. So then you need these exceptions and these other things. Container queries are going to look at the size of the parent rather than looking at the size of the viewport.
Yeah.
And so you can write your component with the CSS for that. And then the layout is changing based on the context that it's inside of. And so we have that coming. We have the units that are coming with it. So instead of a viewport unit, it's a unit that is relative to the width of the parent or the height of the parent. We have the has selectors coming. So it's like a parent selector finally, but it does at the basic level, it's a parent selector, but then you can select a parent that has a certain situation that then you can restyle the children depending on that. We have style queries coming. So like if this property has the color white, do this. If it has the background color purple, there's a lot of new things that are on the way that are going to open up a lot of new doors. And I'm just like the customization and the like all these really cool things that are going to happen. I'm curious what frameworks do with them.
Yeah.
But the one problem with frameworks is always like they have to be just very generic because they need to work in every single project.
Yeah, that's but a hard
that also means you're right. So then, but that means you can't fully like because there's all I don't know. I'm very curious to see how these get integrated into them because I do think like especially container queries I think will be a very natural fit for them.
Yeah.
But for some of the other things, I'm very curious to see. Because there's so many, I'm super excited for all these new things coming and seeing how what people do with them, but then also how they're integrated into larger systems.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know what the future really holds. I'm excited to know what it is.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. Whenever something new gets added, I'm like, I can see where it would be applicable, right? Because it's probably something I struggled with in the past. And I'm like, why isn't this here? Maybe I realize maybe what I'm trying to do is just either too complex or I just shouldn't do it. But it opens up a lot of doors. And because the frameworks, exactly as you say, are frameworks, so they can be used in a lot of projects, doesn't mean they should be. I think just because of that, I don't think we're ever going to have a framework that kind of solves everything. I think if your fundamentals are strong and you know when to use the practices that you're using, I think a framework can be a really helpful tool. But again, it's like enterprise software. It's like the front end or a back end. If you really need those exceptions, if your designer has created something that's really awesome, but your framework it's just a misfit, then you need those exceptions. And for that, you need the fundamental knowledge as well as the knowledge of what's out there, right? If we can all of a sudden say, oh, if this color is here, then your child classes are going to become that instead. Then I could see how that exception can be useful. Doesn't mean we're going to apply it everywhere. But for that really cool design, because I've seen some really awesome designs and some really awesome implementations in that way as well, we're going to have to use CSS still. Yeah, I don't think it's ever going to go away. Just like I don't think the programming languages are going to go away. We're just going to be better at not reinventing the wheel. I think that's our end result.
I think we're really good at reinventing the wheel. It seems to be something that people really enjoy doing.
It helps with those fundamentals, right? If I've tried to do a lot of stuff with CSS. We do innovation days here at Xebia, so we get a day to just mess around. And I've tried to have a microphone on my laptop with input and music, and then through that make a CSS wrapper and let it dance on the music. Oh, that was a lot of fun, just to see how far I could go with CSS. And I even had to throw in some math because I made a circle with things that dance up and down. And I was like, man, my end result was all CSS. And I was like, that's pretty dope. You can still do a lot of cool things with just CSS and even HTML. It's going to bring you far.
And talking about math, I think Safari just landed. They have, you can do sine and tan and all of that in CSS now. And there's other stuff that's coming for that. And yeah, it's kind of crazy where things are going compared to where we used to be. That's for sure.
Yeah, I already say that, and I'm not in the space for as long. I can imagine what it was before. Yeah, things are moving really fast though. The thing I'm struggling with is, All right, at some point you're going to need to specialize because it's just too much. You can't be an expert in and CSS and, for example, React and, for example, pick a backend language plus the infrastructure plus the cloud. That's why I need a breath talking about that, because it's so much. Yet I don't know why, but companies set that expectations on people, and then people take those expectations seriously, and they're like, I'm never going to be an expert in all of this. That's why I like the collaboration aspect, right? Because you can collaborate and get things done that way. I hope it's not going to be more, because if it is a little bit more, it might be a bit too much. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there's some places where that's being realized, and I'm hoping that trend continues, where they realize that people, you know, let's take advantage of people's skill sets instead of expecting people to do everything. You see it come up, and you'll see some. You don't see it in job postings so much, because job postings always seem just to ask for everything and lots of experience. Yeah. But talking with people within the space. Within certain organizations anyway, right now, I'm starting to see where there is these specializations that are being valued, which is really awesome. And hopefully it continues, but yeah, that goes with, I guess, like it's parts of the, I think there's twofold. There's the trends of the industry and just the way things are evolving. And I think when the bigger companies set sort of certain standards, like there's a trickle down, but at the same time, when you have smaller companies or startups and other stuff like that, they don't have the budget to go, okay, we're going to get an expert in five different fields. Yeah. We're going to get the one guy who can do it all, because that's what you know, especially at the beginning, you don't have the budget or the time to sort of invest in building things necessary. You know, it's, what is it? I can't think of the expression. It doesn't matter if you're breaking things though, type of thing. Which I think can be a bit of a dangerous attitude. Sometimes just, you figure, let's get it working and then fix it after. But the cost of doing that can be a lot more than it would have been just to like, okay, let's slow down by 6 months and do things properly from the beginning.
Exactly.
But at the same time, you know, it's exciting starting something new. And you also, if you are building a product or trying to get something off the ground, you want to get it off the ground, and it's hard to go, okay, no, we're going to sit on this and try and have enough funding to last us 9 months before our product exists. Isn't maybe a realistic thing on my side to be asking for that for more people. But it's hard though. When you do those, let's build something as fast as we can to make the MVP. But then instead of being, okay, that's the MVP, but do we start over now? Or are we just trying to fix what we have? And that, you know, it's a tough situation.
Yeah. When it comes to styling in CSS, I've never started a project and been responsible for setting up, for example, our file structure if we're using SAS or our class components and higher order components and stuff like that with regards to the front end. What can you compromise on with regards to speed, and what can't you compromise on? I think responsiveness and like mobile first are going to be in there. Do you have any good examples for that? That's a hard one.
It's a hard one. Yeah. I think one of the advantages with CSS, because, you know, I've seen projects that have years of over, you know, just have been built up over years. So these huge style sheets that just, when you do decide to implement something new, you know, you come in with a new class naming system that's prefixed with whatever, you know, so you just like dot whatever the project name, you know, NP, hyphen, and then whatever your class is.
Yeah.
So you're just prefixing all of it with this thing to say like, okay, this is where our code base is now. Yeah. Any new CSS must, you know, if you're doing it properly, is starting with those. And then you can sort of phase out the old, you know, this page is getting redone, or this layout or this component are getting redone So then like you sort of, it can, or new stuff is being built, but like you can sort of phase things out slowly that way at least. If you're starting a new project though, I think that there's enough tools that are out there right now, whether it's a framework, whether you're sort of just planning things out properly or doing things in a certain way.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to compromise on too much probably. I think the biggest thing is just you make a decision early on that then you sort of regret later, but
yeah,
that's part of life, I think. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I really like that because I think the thought that we can compromise doesn't mean we should, right? You need to set a certain standard of quality. Mm. And if your project is going to be for the long term, which somehow most of them are, even proof of concepts, we tend to just build on top of that. Then make sure your fundamentals are there, right? Just like your knowledge, your code should also have good fundamentals, and then it'll just grow towards the future.
Yeah. And one thing I'm trying to educate myself more on and educate others on while I'm at it, is accessibility. And I think that's one of those things that early on gets ignored because it's like, oh, we'll worry about that later.
Yeah.
And I do think that's one of the things that shouldn't be compromised on early on, just because the technical debt of trying to fix certain things once you've made them inaccessible is a lot harder than just having done it right in the first place. And a lot of the time, it's not that, like most things when it comes to accessibility, like if you start reading about like really deep diving accessibility, it's a rabbit hole that it can feel overwhelming because there's so much to it. But I don't know if the listeners or if you're familiar with like ARIA labels and stuff like that, which are for assistive technologies.
Yeah.
When you start reading about that, there's so much, but the expression is no ARIA is good ARIA. It means you're using the right HTML markup, you know, using semantic code and doing all of that. And so like, as long as you're it's almost like the same idea as before, like less effort in a way is good. You just have to make sure that it's done in the right way. And yeah, then it makes it a lot easier in the long run. So that would be something I would say try not to compromise on if you can convince the stakeholders about it, because it's definitely something that in the long term you're going to need, and it's a lot harder to work backwards on that and try and fix things, because if it's wrong, then it often just needs to be torn down and rebuilt, basically.
Yeah, and that's a huge shame. I love that answer. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that myself, but it's because I've never been in the situation where we were like, okay, we never took it into account and now we have to tear down everything. And I can't see, if you didn't take it into account, it's like tearing down all the walls around you and starting.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. I love how this conversation flowed, learning about how you kind of started out and the real focus on teaching to where you are now, really passionate about CSS and where it's going. Is there anything that's missing you still wanted to share?
No, I think I enjoyed it too. It was a fun conversation.
Love hearing that. Then we're gonna round it off here. Kevin Powell, everyone. I'm gonna put all the links to his socials in the description below. And thank you for listening. We'll see you on the next one.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a blast.
Awesome.